All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mount West Wire podcast football edition. Jeremy Moss, Matt Kennerly. Even though we recorded this quote-unquote last week, was the word you used strut to make it through the offseason with us together?
Yes, it was.
We're strutting through podcast number two, Colorado State Rams football. Our website, which we probably should introduce where we are, MWR.com, part of USA Today, so we're sort of a big deal, maybe, depends you ask. MWC Wire on Twitter. I would like to get to 2,000 Twitter followers very soon. So if you like jokes, like if you like insightful statistics, GIFs, we actually conversate with people on Twitter, unlike other brands who just tweet out their RSS feed. Give us a shout out. Let us know. We'll talk about anything. We're not afraid to argue either. So
we've also had a surprisingly robust stream of college basketball news.
We do. So that, hey, we're not, football is our bread and butter, but we still do some basketball here and there. Or not here and there, I should say. We do a lot of basketball. But check for every sport, right? That's what we do. So this week we are doing what? Colorado State? Is that who I just said a minute ago?
That is what you said.
So should we just get to it, I guess? Or is there any more? We don't need to screw around. Or we don't need food talk, music talk. We just talk football now, right? Is that the plan?
No, let's get into it.
Because these podcasts are at least 65 minutes.
Serious business.
Even with the teams who aren't expected to be as good? 65 plus minutes. Lobo podcast, our first one, 75 minutes.
Nice.
So we put out polls, so we appreciate round two going to the Rams. Next podcast, as of recording, I'm going to confidently say San Diego State's our next podcast.
I did see the latest figures, and it is, anything can happen, as the first two results have shown. But yes. The Aztecs faithful are showing up because they want to be heard.
Also, one thing I mentioned in prior podcast, we're doing our Patreon a bit different now. We're actually sending you content and help you guys out instead of us just posting sporadically. So if you want this podcast, basically now, we're going to post this the first week of June. However, for some of you, if you're lucky, it's not the first week of June. So as soon as we post any podcast, we'll strip out any ads and stuff from Blog Talk Radio. It'll just be you and me jibber-jabbering about football. So if you want to listen to these early, no more insight than your buddy, give us $1 a month and you're good to go. Anytime we get podcasts and other fun stuff, we'll do some other cool things, but that's the podcast front. So thank you very much. Tell five friends and on to the Rams. So my biggest concern, Michael Gallup is gone. They don't have a quarterback. Their defense is not very good and they have two new coordinators.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, that's all. Are they missing a punter somewhere? Did I miss a special teams guy?
No, they still have a pretty good punter.
Okay, there we go. Let's start there. Punter, go.
Well, okay, so let me reframe it so it's not all doom and gloom. I think what's maybe most interesting about this team coming into 2018 is, is it fair to say they missed their best chance at the throne?
Well, so far, yes. To date.
So far. Like, I think we both came into last year's previews with very high expectations for this team.
Yeah, and can I blame the refs in this Colorado game? Is that okay to still do? Or is that too soon or not far enough away? Or is it good to do?
I'm sure if you asked a CSU fan, they would absolutely agree with you on that. But, I mean, I think we all expected them to contend for a conference title, and then what ended up happening instead was a kind of a series of really tough losses, and it ended up being kind of, they ended up where they had been the previous 2 years before that, right around 7-5, 7-6. And so what's interesting is that, yeah, maybe they missed their best chance at a conference title, but I don't think that necessarily means that they're going away. Like, they don't have the same problems that like an Air Force had, coming into last year, or New Mexico had coming into last year. There's still a lot of talent on both sides of the ball, and maybe you can construct an argument for them as being kind of like the darkest of the dark horses for a conference title.
That belongs to Nevada Wolfpack.
I guess that could be true. But, I guess what I'm saying overall is that, this is a team that isn't going away anytime soon. But as you so eloquently addressed it, they still have some pretty significant questions to overcome in order to come back and try to reach their ceiling.
Yeah, because last year, while they went 7-6, that Colorado game was just tough. They played Alabama sort of close, lose by 18. But then the Air Force, the only game that's really out of the ordinary for me was the Air Force game, where they lost 45-28. That was just kind of weird. But they played the Wyoming, the Snow Bowl game, very close, 16-13. They blew a huge 28-3 lead versus Boise State, and they lost 31-28 versus Marshall. So they really could have had possibly three more wins on the schedule and had been 10-3, we having a completely different conversation this next year. But they lost those close games. And also, a thing to note, like, we mentioned Bob Davey, hot seat, jokingly Matt Wells. Not kidding. Mike Bobo could be in trouble. Not to be all doom and gloom, but look at the – it's been mentioned this past year, like, rival games and bowl games. He's won – I should have it up here, but he doesn't beat Colorado. He doesn't beat Boise State. He does win bowl games. Doesn't beat Wyoming either.
I mean, I think it'll be forgiven as long as he keeps winning to an acceptable degree. I mean, I think – I don't know. I mean, I think I'm of two minds of it because I can definitely see that argument. But, you know, one of the things that we talk about from time to time are kind of the vagaries of one score games. And especially when you look at the second half of last season, you know, I think one of the things we talked about in their preview this time last year was the fact that, like, you know, their offense was one of the best in the country at the end of 2016. Right. Mm-hmm. And what I see when I look back at the second half of 2017 is, you know, how narratives can turn just on these very slight, you know, degrees of difference. Because, you know, they beat Nevada by 2, they beat New Mexico by 3, they lost to Wyoming by 3, they lost to Boise by 7, they lost to Marshall by 3. And so I think when you look back and take a look at the big picture, you know, generally speaking, if you were right around 500 in those kinds of one score situations, you know, you're kind of, I mean, that's kind of like the average. Like, you know, some teams get lucky, some teams get unlucky. I know we've talked about it, you know, more than once when it comes to Utah State, for instance. But I think if they can benefit from a little more good fortune than they did last year, I think that, you know, whatever pessimism surrounds this program or Mike Bobo in particular, you know, those people could be singing a very different tune by the time we look back on this in December.
Here's a quick note. I'm going through Mike Bobo's just kind of reinforce. He's 0-3 versus Colorado, 0-3 in bowl games, 0-3 versus Boise State. It's 0-9 against your – not, and then Wyoming, he lost, let's see, one, let's see, two. Did he lose to Wyoming all 3 years? He beat Wyoming once. He's won – basically 1-12 against the teams they want to beat.
Uh-huh.
Or rival slash bowl games, 1-12. Or excuse me, 1-11. That's not good.
I mean, there's always these, like, at least over the last couple of years, these incongruencies between how good the team looks sometimes – and then kind of like the overall result of this team, like it kind of always leaves you with a, you know, a feeling of wanting a little bit more, if that makes sense.
Well, last year I got flack for it, saying Nick Stevens would be the best quarterback in the conference. People were
That's
just
true.
Josh Allen. And then we find out Brett Rippon splitting time. I think I was right, but they just fell apart at the end of the year. Those close games and all those losses. And it's part of it was their defense, because you nearly lose to a bad Nevada team. New Mexico wasn't very good, and then you get blown out by a mediocre Air Force team who didn't go to a bowl game. You snow game's kind of awkward, but then you blow a 28-3 versus Boise State. It's like, stuff like that can't happen. And so they do have new OC and new DC, so maybe that'll have something to do with it, because Will Friend took the offensive line coaching job at Tennessee, and Marty English retired.
Mm-hmm.
So, but here's the thing, Mike Bobo's still going to call the plays. He's still basically the OC, because Will Friend basically technically OC, but really the O-line coach.
Yeah.
And their line was pretty good with Jake Bennett, and their running back depth is probably the best in the conference, I could say, is still again this year. But I don't know. The biggest question for me is to start with it. We mentioned it before. Colin Hill tore his ACL again. He's probably going to miss the whole year. They say he'll be back, but I don't buy that, because it happened right before spring football in, what, late February? Mm-hmm. It takes you 10 months. That's March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October. You know what I mean? It's like let's say eight months. That's still – September, you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't see why he'd play. He might be, because he was technically healthy last year to play, or not last year, before, or no, last year, sorry. And he didn't really play that much. It went to Nick Stevens. So they got KJ Curtis Samuels, who's the younger brother of Austin Curtis Samuels, who was at Wyoming, then Vanderbilt. Like I said in our last show, I believe he was going to go to UCLA, Chip Kelly. Ended up at from Washington to Colorado State, going to be the starter, I'm assuming. But he wasn't there for springs. He wasn't able to participate. Let's just start there. Like, how big a deal is it? Or first off, do you think it's going to be Carter Samuels as a starting quarterback?
I mean, I think so, because most of what I remember reading, you know, with regards to the quarterbacks who were in for spring ball this year was that, you know, after Hill got hurt, you know, you have someone like J.C. Robles, for instance, and, you know, he wasn't terribly impressive by everything that I read. And so, you know, he's maybe kind of the, I don't know, always a bridesmaid, never a bride kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, Justice McCoy, redshirt freshman, also was kind of middling here and there. And, you know, I think maybe it's, you know, it's a product of Mike Bobo recruiting pretty well, because Justice McCoy did come in with, you know, a fair bit of pedigree. I believe he was a 3-star quarterback. But I do think that being able to secure someone like Carter Samuels as a transfer is a very big deal for this team, because, you know, I think I mentioned it briefly in our New Mexico preview, but I don't see this move as being similar to the move that Bobo made in his first year when he brought in Faten Bauta as a transfer. You know, Bauta was very clearly a runner first before he was a thrower, and I think what Colorado State needed was someone who knew how to throw the football. And KJ Carter Samuels, by everything that I've seen, is a guy who knows exactly how to do that. You know, he's a 4-star guy. Mm-hmm. Who had any number of offers before he ended up at Washington. And, you know, it's really hard to blame a guy for getting beaten out by another guy who's going to be on the Heisman shortlist, you know, probably this year, in Jake Browning.
And I think Washington has, I think, 4, or if you include him, Carter Samuels, 4 4-star quarterbacks on the roster, 3 4-star quarterbacks. So they're pretty deep. And so playing time is hard to come by.
Yeah, and I mean, so last year he only got limited action, and, you know, most of what I saw came from his performance in the fourth quarter against Fresno State. But, you know, he went 5 for 5, and he moved the ball fairly efficiently down the field. Like, I think he had, like, one pass that was dropped, basically. It wasn't any fault of his. Mm-hmm. And in looking at, you know, practice tape that people put up on YouTube, which, by the way, mm-hmm. thank you, nameless internet denizens, for doing something like that.
Heroes.
He's got a pretty good arm, you know? And I think he's going to be able to make a lot of the throws that will make, you know, a loss like Gallup, which you alluded to earlier, a little more tolerable than it might have been otherwise. So, yeah, losing Colin Hill is going to hurt. And, you know, maybe they were a little bit concerned about Robles and McCoy maybe not performing up to expectations. But I think if Carter Samuels can come in at the beginning of fall camp and build a rapport with those guys, I think, you know, Colorado State's not going to lose too much, if anything at all, by losing Nick Stevens.
How much do you think of him going for UCLA for a second makes Rams fans think this is higher expectations than they should be?
I mean, I don't really give too much credence to it, if only because, like, we knew when he was being recruited, like, he was recruited pretty heavily by Boise State, among others, was he not?
I'll say that, sure. I'm looking right here.
I'm pretty sure that he was.
Yes, he had official,
he ended up at Washington.
Yeah, official visit, Boise State, looks like. He also was a verbal commit to Vanderbilt at one point, partly because his brother was there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there's enough information out there to suggest that he was a pretty good quarterback who just, you know, ended up getting beat out by an even better quarterback. You know, this isn't like a, I mean, I hate to bring it up, but like a David Cromwell, or Cornwell, rather.
Yeah.
I think he's a better prospect than David Cornwell. I think he's a better prospect than Bauta. I think he's a better prospect than, for instance, someone like Blake Barnett, who's transferred, I think, twice now in the last 2 years.
That name, Blake Barnett. Yeah, he's at South Florida now.
Yeah, so, you know, to me, you know, maybe the expectations were already pretty high, but I think that they deserve to be there because I think, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, Brett Rypien, Marcus McMarion, Ty Gianji as being kind of 1-2-3, you know, take your pick of whichever one you like. But I don't think it's a stretch to say that Carter Samuels could play himself into that conversation as being, you know, a first-team caliber quarterback in the Mountain West this year.
In my – this is what when I post this, just May 23rd, I put – I'm going to do this like I did last year. I did a kind of post-spring break in the quarterbacks every week, partly because there is some uncertainty with Colorado State. I put Carter Samuels as number 8th quarterback going into the season. Is that too high, too low?
I mean, for me, I think that's too low.
Okay. Why is this? Because you think his talent, high school talent, and where he played precedes like established guys like Arian Worthman or Christian Chapman?
I do. Yeah, I think that he's ultimately going to end up making more plays than both of those guys this year.
Okay.
But I also think, as maybe a way of segueing to other parts of the offense, that, you know, even if he struggles a little bit out of the gate, that it's not necessarily a bad thing, because I do believe that they have enough pieces around him to make that transition pretty easy, I think. Because, you know, they do lose Dalen Dawkins, who was their leading rusher from last year. But I think, you know, when you consider the trio of running backs that they have returning for 2018, you know, you start with Izzy Matthews, who's going into his senior year, 600 yards last year and 8 touchdowns, over 5 yards a carry. I think if you can get a little more out of the other two guys, Rashad Boddy, who had moments, looked like a very physical runner. I'm very high on his potential coming into this year. And if Marvin Kinsey can show that he's, you know, basically back to 100% in the year after coming back from an injury, you know, the running game maybe was, you know, hit or miss at times last year, but I think there's enough potential there to make it a very dangerous attack, all things considered, if all three of those guys can play up to their talent, up to their up to their caliber of play.
Because I remember last year in the opener versus Oregon State, Mike Bubb was stumbling over words of highest of high praise for Rashad Boddy. True freshman, yes. Like, why is he getting plays? We knew Kinsey Jr. had the ACL, so we weren't sure how much he'd play. Played a bit more than I thought, but Bodie just kind of a freshman thing, and they already had Dalen Dawkins. Izzy Matthews was basically a short yardage guy, despite having the amount of carries and touchdowns he did. So I think, honestly, want to see a surprise move? I think Boddy could be the lead the team in rushing this year, or about Rashard. Yeah, I think that's a possibility.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, we came up with the hashtag bodied last year.
Exactly. See, we're ahead of
which,
the curve.
You know, because that's the kind of runner he is. And I think that, you know, maybe at times last year, that was something they missed a little bit.
And then also Marcus McElroy, he's the highest rated recruit at the running back position.
That's true.
So I don't know how much time he'll play. He's a sophomore this year, but you never, I think you're right. Whoever's quarterback, they'll have plenty of time to acclimate themselves, especially if it's Carter Samuels, who didn't do spring, only going to have fall camp and whatever he does during summer conditioning and just hanging out with the players to get to know them. They'll rely on the running game, which I think, man, the running game's good in this conference too. You got San Diego State, will have Juwan Washington, their whole offensive line back. We mentioned how good UNLV is. Air Force is always good. New Mexico should be pretty good. Maybe not be elite, but still above average. Alexander Madison at Boise State, so... But I think this might be, I think I mentioned, I forget who I said last week might be better, but I think this is probably the best running group. So just hand the ball off to whoever, right?
Yeah, they're definitely kind of in that upper echelon of running units, yeah.
So let's go to the offensive line. Here's the one issue where it could come back to get them, maybe. Bennett's gone. Did he get drafted or not drafted? I forget.
I believe he signed an undrafted free agent deal.
Okay. But here's the thing. Bennett's gone, first team, former first team All-Mountain West. Zach Godlich. First team, All Mountain West got honorable mention. First team, Trey Moxley. However, they bring back Colvin Meeks, who will be the guy 11 career starts at right guard. Everybody's upperclassman, senior or junior, with a handful of starts. So they played a little bit here and there. It's not like they're going to bring in a freshman. Maybe one of these redshirt guys, like see Lewis LeBron, 350, 6'4". John Blasco Jr., 6'7", 305. Who knows? But I think despite losing those three guys, which is a big loss, it's not like they're bringing in guys who never played before. So that is a small concern, but upperclassmen, they're Bobo's recruits. Yeah, Will Friend's not there anymore, but they should be fine. But it's still something to look at when you lose three of the best 15 offensive linemen in the conference on your team.
I mean, I'm not overly concerned about that, if only because, you know, again, Mike Bobo has recruited really well. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's a chance for one or two of these redshirt freshmen to play their way into the conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, someone like Luis LeBron or John Blasco.
Giants.
Yeah. Or, you know, someone like TJ Rountree, who I think is expected to slot in, I believe, at left tackle. You know, he's a transfer from Louisville who, you know, even though he only appeared in 5 games last year, did start all 13 games for the Cardinals back in 2016. So it's not as though they don't have guys who don't have experience, if that makes sense. And the guys they do have returning are pretty solid contributors. I think Ben Knox was kind of a, I think he was kind of a swing tackle last year, but he always played pretty well. You know, Colby Meeks is back at center. He's very quietly productive. So, you know, they have some options when it comes to replacing those holes at center and at
left tackle. Well, also, two guys forgot to mention, Louisville transfer TJ Roundtree and Keith Williams, JUCO guy. So,
yeah.
Those are all those upperclassmen guys. And apparently I did not realize this. There's 5 seniors, which we knew, and 10 former 3-star recruits. So, I think they'll be fine, right?
I think they probably will be.
So, Michael Gallup, who I predicted, and I say people copied me, but I don't think that's the case, really. Could be rookie of the year in the NFL, maybe. Wide receiver with the Dallas Cowboys. He's gone. He's pretty good. They also lose Dietrich Clark, and then obviously Dawkins was a decent running back, and then Dalton Frackrell, tight end, had about 20 catches. Obasai Johnson better get, like, 85 receptions this year. He needs to, for this offense to be really good, because, and he should have the chances, too. With the good, how good the running game is, and you assume Curtis Samuels take a little bit to get going, he should have opportunities because they know they don't have to double or account for Michael Gallup anymore. They want to go for the running game. The defense will scheme, okay, we stop Dawkins, stop Kinsey, stop Abadi, stop all these guys up front. That'll leave more single coverage and less like shading coverage or zone coverage against Johnson. But he's still the main guy, so that might be there. But I think there could be chances for him to. Probably not do what Gallup did, but almost double his production, like maybe 41 to 75 catches.
I mean, I definitely think so. You know, and it's not only him. One guy I'm very excited to see in his second year is Warren Jackson, because he stuck out as a guy who, you know, I remember he made at least one very tough catch against Alabama last year that really impressed me. And, you know, he's one of those guys that sticks out literally, too, because he's like 6'5 and 205 pounds. So I think that he makes a pretty nice compliment to someone like Olabisi Johnson, who's, you know, he's only 6 foot. So I think between those two guys, you've got the makings of still a pretty good 1-2 on the outside. And, you know, even though losing Dalton Backwell hurts, they do have at least two guys behind him who could step up. Cameron Butler, I think, is a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Or as someone that a lot of people are very excited about. So even though he only had, I think, a dozen catches last year, you know,
backup though, that's not bad.
Yeah, and even if he's not doing much more, you know, even if he's not catching that much many more passes than Backrell did a year ago, you know, if he could double his production, I think a lot of people are going to be happy about that. But then, you know, once you get past Johnson and Jackson at receiver. You begin to realize that nobody else on the team had any catches last year at receiver.
Yeah, this is the position where sophomore, redshirt freshman, true freshman.
And that, I think, is something that, you know, you look at Dietrich Clark, who may be very unheralded when you compare him to someone like Michael Gallup. But, I mean, you're looking at a guy who had 40 catches, and he had, you know, over 12 yards a catch. But most importantly, he had a 70% catch rate, which was the best on the team outside of Jackson. So, you know, he was kind of like a short to mid-range guy who knew how to make plays, brought a little bit of versatility to the team that, you know, he did something different than what Gallup and Johnson were doing. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious to see how they replace someone like him.
Could it be Darius Weiss, maybe?
I mean, they do have options. They have a lot of guys listed at receiver on their team. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe someone like EJ Scott, who's a redshirt freshman. I think he was a 3-star guy. Preston Williams may be another guy to do that. Or maybe, you know, someone like Darius Wise. I believe Wise was a 3-star. Tells you a lot. They have a lot of 3-star
recruits. Well, Tyler, like, here's another guy. Tyler Smith, the highest rated recruit on their roster right now, redshirt freshman.
Yeah.
Nico Hall. Sorry, I apologize for that. By point. 0.002, Nico Hall is barely better than Tyler Smith. So, and he's a true freshman, Nico Hall. I think Nico Hall the highest rated recruit in the Mountain West last year?
I don't remember that off the top of my head.
Pretty high, but continue. Go with your thought. I'll look into that for you.
Yeah, and then also, you know, Tyler Smith was a fellow 2017 recruit. I think he's still in the conversation. So, I mean, they have plenty of options. It's just a matter of figuring out who that third guy is going to be. because I think that's really important for what's going to make this offense go. And, you know, along similar lines, you know, one of the things they might miss most from Dawkins is the fact that he was a better pass catcher out of the backfield than just about anybody. You know, he was a guy who also caught, I think, like 2/3 of his passes. So while he only ended up with 26 catches, you know, do we know, like, whether Boddy or, you know, Kinsey are going to be able to replicate that production? Because I think that's another one of those things that's maybe, you know, you see Gallup with his highlight catches, but it's those kind of underneath passes that make a big difference for this offense as well.
Yeah, Gallup did a lot of different things. So
yeah.
Receiving will be, again, I think finding a running back who catches the ball is a pretty big deal just because you got to have somebody. Maybe it's Boddy, maybe it's Kinsey who didn't have the opportunity last year or even 2 years with Kinsey.
That's true.
So that's a big concern. Like, that's a big thing too. New quarterback, basically all new receivers. They're going to rely so much on the running game. So I wouldn't be surprised. They already do a pro style set anyways. I wouldn't be surprised if they go like 60-40 running the ball minimum.
I mean, I think that they could probably do what they did last year on offense if they wanted to. It's just a matter of, you know, identifying one or two guys to really step up in the passing game. But the good news is, you know, there are plenty of pretty good options in order to do that.
All right, let's go to the defense here. You ready to go to defense?
Let's do it.
Marty English retired. And their new defensive coordinator, as I should have looked it up before,
John Jancic.
Where did he? Oh yeah, was he from Tennessee? Right.
He was.
Yeah. See, I know stuff, people.
You know things. You're like Andy Dwyer.
Exactly. I know things. Not from Cornell, but I know things. Here's the thing. Part of it. One interesting note is that the defense obviously wasn't great, but it seems like they're going to switch to the 4-3, which hopefully that can make a difference because. I remember 2 years ago talking about when they made that big run after Nick Stevens came back in. Part of it was the defense with Marty English, something clicked in the Utah State victory. They played quite a bit well 2 years ago. Last year, they were hit or miss. Again, the Boise State losing the overtime after having a 25-point lead. Getting two new coordinators is kind of why I think Bobo could be on the hot seat for going multiple, not as I mentioned before, not beating your rivals, not winning bowl games, and going 7-6 each year. And last year, like you said, last season, huge expectations. But here's the thing. They return most of their defensive line. They return most of their linebackers. And they lose a bit in the secondary. So I know it's like a couple years ago we talked about Wyoming. They had guys like Andrew Wingard who had to start. They had guys like Logan Wilson who had to start as true freshmen. But the defense weren't very good. I'm not saying this could be the same situation. Because you always say it a lot. If you have returning talent, that's good. But if it's not good returning talent, who cares? It's just because you played games. Doesn't necessarily you're going to be better if you go from 10 starts to 24 starts in a year time. But they do have enough talent back where you would hope that they learned from what happened last year and could figure things out to be a better defense than last year.
I mean, I think that moving from the 3-4 to the 4-3 is probably a smart move. But the question that I have is, you know, do they have the bodies on the interior to really make it work? Because I'm thinking about how Fresno State made the similar kind of move last year. But, you know, they had a Malik Forrester who was able to really be disruptive inside. And when I'm looking at, you know, how these guys are built physically, the guys who are slated to be along the line, I'm not sure offhand whether they have someone who can be disruptive on the inside like that. Like, I feel like they're, you know, the ends are probably going to be fine. You know, I think RJ Jean could take a step forward in a defense like this. I think that, you know, Ellison Hubbard could probably do the same thing. But, you know, you're talking about, you know, one guy's 240, the other guy's 270. Like, yeah, are they going to have a 290 or 300-pound guy to be able to kind of attack the inside?
That's where Jamari Foxx comes in. 320, 6'1". But here's the thing, like, you mentioned Hubbard. He was a nose tackle in that 3-4. He could still basically play the same thing in a 4-3. But 270 on the interior, not that big. Richard King is a little bit bigger, but they may need to get, like, seriously, get Fox in there. Get Devin Phillips in there. He's a true freshman, may not play a ton, but you can't be, like, Troy Golden, defensive end, true freshman, 6'3", 207. That's, come on. You got to be at least 215.
Okay, so the Coloradoan they put together kind of a projected 2-deep back in late April, and nobody on the 2-deep along the defensive line is more than 275.
That's a problem.
It might be. I mean, I think that, you know, maybe that means they rely heavily on a rotation, which, you know, if that's the case, then I think they have plenty of guys who have plenty of talent because, you know, Tommy McBride 2 years ago had a very promising freshman year, and then last year was mostly derailed by injury.
You
know, he's coming back. He could be a productive pass rusher. You know, Gene could be a pass rusher. King and Hubbard in the middle could do something, but I also think, you know, Anthony Smith behind them could be in that kind of a defensive tackle rotation, excuse me. So I think if there's a question anywhere on this defense, it's going to be how do those guys hold up? Because if they can, I think that makes the promise that the linebacking core has, you know, I think it helps them realize it a little more than if they are continually kind of, you know, punched in the gut inside, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And one thing to consider, if you have lighter guys, probably faster, and maybe you have the edge guy beat that left tackle who's 320.
Mm-hmm.
That could be something too. Like you go to 4-3, give you more guys up front, which you'll need it if for being a little bit smaller, which is a smart move. But if you have speed on the outside, you're not going to be not as often, depending on how your shift is. The linebacker's going to blitz from the edge. But if you have speed, beat the fat right tackle on the side. You know what I mean? Beat those guys
who are super
fast. You may take a longer step, but if you have that first step, beat them off the line, give them a little shit, like a little forearm under the hip there to get around them or something, a little swim move underneath, not above. Maybe get sneak on by or some spin thing where you're way faster. So that's it's like what I kind of mentioned at Air Force quite a bit for their defense, where they're always smaller due to academy restrictions, but they have a speed, and that's why they are usually not too bad at getting to the quarterback, getting to the backfield more often than other times. But the linebacker spot, I think that's going to be their best position, I think. Because they only lost Clarito?
Mm-hmm.
Clarito gone, 36 total tackles, but you get probably Josh Watson, who could be one of the best defenders in the conference. Probably not as heralded as like Logan Wilson or other guys in other teams or anybody in San Diego State, but he led the team in tackles. He had plenty of TFLs, plenty of sacks, a couple picks, 7 pass breakups, and so he's all over the field. Do you think he'd be a first-team linebacker pick, perhaps?
I think that, yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely an argument for it, especially when you consider his production from last year, where he not only you know, led the Rams in tackles, but he had 5 tackles for loss. He had 2 sacks, 2 interceptions, 7 pass breakups. So he was a guy who did a little bit of everything. To me, I think it'll be more interesting to see, you know, the guys around him take a step forward. Because, you know, Max McDonald as a sophomore also ended up having quietly a pretty good season because he had 5 tackles for loss in a sack and a half as well. I think, you know, it'll be tough to replace Colorado's production because I think, you know, when you look back at last year, you know, one of the things I am most interested in personally is the idea of havoc rate. So if you're not familiar with Bill Connolly's work, I'll just explain it real quick.
Well, essentially, get familiar with it first of all.
But essentially what havoc rate is the percentage of plays in which a unit, you know, collects a tackle for a loss or pass breakup or an interception, you know, anything like that, anything disruptive. And last year, the linebackers at Colorado State ranked 16th nationally. But Colorado was the guy who had the biggest impact on that figure just because he had 12 tackles for loss and 5.5 sacks. So, you know, maybe it's not one guy who steps up to replace all that production himself. But I think between, you know, Watson, McDonald, and, you know, someone like Trey Thomas, for instance, you know, you've got a trio of upperclassmen who have experience in the system, you know, who are going to have, you know, maybe a little less to do, you know, in the 4-3 than they would have had to do in the 3-4. But those guys are going to have a lot of responsibility on their hands. And, you know, if they can be a little more productive, you know, that I think is going to make up for whatever questions exist along the defensive line.
So I'm looking at this stuff here for Colorado State. Who they have coming back and their defense. Well, first off, they're terrible at yards per play, 6.29 last year. But did you take a look at the radar Bill Connolly had out there for the defense?
I did not.
It is quite small. You want to have a large radar because success rate means number one's the farthest you think you're. It looks like just kind of a spider graph type deal. So, a radar, I should say. So, they were like 100 or below in like nearly any category, like success rate, average yards on first down, average distance on third down, stuff rate, like, not very good. Like their best one was yards per completion and like completion rate. And part of that yards per completion could be because teams were running on them as well, say it's short passing situations.
Yeah.
And so you want it to be wider, like their offense is quite good because it encompasses basically the whole graph there. The radar is pretty spread out. And so they have pieces back there. They have the new defensive coordinator, so maybe the switch will make that happen to make them be better. Secondary is going to be an issue too, especially in this conference, as we'll mention throughout. They play Boise State. We'll throw quite a bit. They, who else? Wyoming probably want to throw. They'll try to throw, maybe. Utah State will throw a lot. So there's a couple teams just within the division that'll throw a lot. They play, Colorado might want to throw a bit. I know they got Arkansas. I don't think they'll throw a ton, but there's a lot of teams that pass in this conference, and even teams that pass okay, like playing at San Jose State with Montel Aaron, who I'm more high on, that could be some of an issue. They play at Nevada, like what happened last year. Ty Gange will throw it will on them. You know what I mean? Or they play at Florida. Well, never mind. They don't have a quarterback. That's fine. But Hawaii does the run and shoot. They're changing to that. And so that secondary could be the biggest concern overall.
That secondary could be what makes or breaks this season. You know, we talk about Colorado State being a potential dark horse for a division title. Mm-hmm. If that secondary doesn't come together, that dream is going to fall apart really quickly. Because, yeah, they do have some nice pieces back there. I think Anthony Hopkins, who was recruited as a receiver, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, he stepped in as a cornerback and had three interceptions last year. He's got one spot locked down. You know, Jordan Fogle of free safety has another spot locked down. And then, you know, Jamal Hicks, if he's back 100% from injury, you know, he had a pretty good season before he got hurt as well. You know, he ended up with a couple of picks. So, you know, some of it was, you know, their production was dragged down by injury a little bit. But, you know, we talked about it with New Mexico. One of the things that Colorado State's going to have to figure out is how do you turn some of that production that you're coming up against into turnovers? Because the only team in the conference with fewer interceptions in conference play last year was New Mexico. Hmm. You know, the Lobos had two, the Rams had just three interceptions in Mountain West play last year. So while they finished middle of the pack as far as quarterback rating is concerned, you know, they were a little bit below average in yards per play allowed. And in, you know, even though they were a little bit above average in, actually, you know what? They were number one in opponents' completion percentage last year.
There you go.
But so, I mean, I think that there's promise here, but, you know, I think replacing Kevin Nutt Jr. Is not going to be easy, especially since, you know, two of the guys that were behind him, Sean Johnson and Justin Sweet, are also gone. So, you know, if Braylon Scott, for instance, can come back and be kind of what he was 2 years ago, that's going to make, you know, the defense that much tougher. But I think that's an open question at the moment.
All right, let me mention this about the defense secondary. Yes, they have losing guys, but they have six guys who played 10 or more games last year. And that doesn't include Jamal Hicks. Or, excuse me, Braylon Scott 2 years ago. So five guys played double-digit games. Hicks was injured, played 8. Scott played 11 the year before he got hurt. I guess my one concern, too, is that maybe the change of defense or that 4-3 will help it out, but it's not good when one of your leading tacklers, Jordan Fogle, has 9% of the team's tackles, which was, what, second on the team? I get it. They may bring the safety blitz or bring him in to stop the run, but that's not something you want to see happen. You'd rather have them doing pass breakups, which he had 4 of and 2 picks. So that's something I want to see change where they don't need to rely on the secondary to stop the running game.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you need to add? I think we've gone through, I guess, special teams since I always neglect it.
Well, I mean, I think that Colorado State's in pretty good hands when it comes to special teams because they do have one of the better kickers, you know, in Wyatt Bryan, mm-hmm. who, you know, he was 10 of 12 from inside 40 yards, but I think maybe more importantly, he was 5 of 6 from beyond 40 yards. So, yeah, I think that, you know, can make a difference in a close game, you know, if we're expecting the Rams to be able to play a lot of one score games again this year, you know, at least having a reliable kicker could push things in their favor from week to week. And I think when you consider that, you know, Ryan Stonehouse was performing as a freshman last year, the fact that he ended up with averaging almost 46 yards a punt, it's pretty good, I think, all things considered.
Do you think Obaisi Johnson will still be returning punts?
I mean, I think so. I'm not sure what other kinds of options they have offhand.
So you also need two new kick returners as well. So,
yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. All right. Let's take a quick timeout because it's time to take a timeout because I say so. And we'll be back in a moment to talk what schedules, right, Matt?
Mm-hmm.
Prediction time coming soon your way. All right. Time to go through the Rams schedule, which for the first time ever in conference play, or excuse me, league history, they play a conference game opening weekend.
Interesting, right?
Yes, and not only is it opening weekend, it's week 0 Hawaii at Colorado State.
They're welcoming us back.
In the newly named Ram Stadium, which is some credit union, I don't know. Was it PCSU?
PS? We could just call it some credit union or other stadium.
Not your credit union, right? Because it's probably not your credit union.
Or we can call it the SKU for sure.
P-SKU?
Some credit union or other. SKU.
Okay. So they open up VersaWide. There's actually odds. All right, first off, we back up. We missed this. Over-under win total by some Las Vegas casino. I'll write an article on later. Have you looked at these yet? The Rams one?
I did. I'm trying to – actually, you know – oh, yes, I do have the tab still up. Thank goodness.
Do you remember what it is?
I have it
right in front of me. That's what I'm wondering. Five and a half.
I don't remember.
5.5 seems brutally low.
That seems like really easy money.
Hey, I could drive 90 minutes to Wendover, Nevada, or maybe it'll become legal in Utah. Who am I kidding? It'll never become legal here. Or at least not by football season. So, I'd say that's easy money. So if you're in a place where you can legally gamble, which is becoming more and more, I think, New Jersey probably any day now. If you're in Nevada, go put a few bucks, right? Why not?
Mm-hmm.
So here's week one, Hawaii, who we'll get to later, who's going to do a bunch of run and shoot, crazy offense. And I love have you seen Coach Rollo doing pitching basically every time for Hawaii baseball the past month or two on Twitter?
I have.
He's a pretty good arm, played quarterback, so.
It's not bad at all.
So they play Hawaii at home. This should be a victory, I think. I think it'll be close. I don't know, because Hawaii's weird. They've come to the mainland, but it's week one. They have not a great defense. They lose Dylan Colley. They lose their starting running back, who Dyson May St. Juice. They have a new quarterback. Not to make this the Hawaii show, but I don't have any confidence in what Hawaii will do. So I'm going Rams big opener, like by more than the 10-point margin S&P has right now.
I mean, I think I'm right there with you. I think if it takes a little while for the Rams offense to get going, I wouldn't be surprised. But I do think all things considered, you know, going into 2018, I think the Rams offense has a higher ceiling than the Warriors offense. So, you know, even if they do get off to a slugger start in the first quarter or something like that, I expect it to be like, I don't know, a 2-touchdown win or something like that.
I do think John Osura could have a pretty big game coming back from that knee injury last year. So that could be the one thorn in the Rams side where he keeps him in the game by getting like multiple 50-yard passes like he did versus, like, was it 200-plus yards versus UMass and whoever else he played with. So
yeah,
that's a concern. They play Colorado, neutral site in Denver, 6 days later, so it's on Friday night. This game's always weird because, as I mentioned before, Mike Bubba has never beaten the Buffaloes. Colorado, they have a new quarterback, right?
No, I believe Steven Montez is still a quarterback.
Oh, maybe I was thinking 2 years ago. So they have Steven Montez there. They have Mike McIntyre, still their head coach, former Rams coach out there. Or not Rams, excuse me, Spartans coach, not Rams. I don't know, because when you look at the Buffaloes have done the past couple of years, they've been kind of hit or miss. They're projected this year to go like 5-7 under Mike McIntyre, who, if you can believe it or not, sixth year at Colorado.
It doesn't seem like it's been that long.
It's going to be a sixth year, yeah. And so they had the 2016 year that was great. Last year wasn't very good. And so this game just baffles me because Colorado has never really been that great. Like 2016, they were really good. And they crushed the Rams. That was the triple headed quarterback monster. That was a complete mess. But they're somehow still basically coin toss to win this game. I don't know. I think the Rams should run the ball quite well and do good and possibly win this game. But it's going to be a... Like, even going before the past 3 years, it's been pretty close games every year, it seems like.
I mean, I'm trying to remember last year's game as best as I can. And
no,
I mean,
offense. That's what it was. No offense.
It just seemed... Yeah, and if you look at, like, the percentages on Football Study Hall, like, it was by far their worst offensive performance of the year. Mm-hmm. Like, they even managed, like, 28% against Alabama, and they were only 12 against Colorado. And... You know, that doesn't strike me as the kind of thing that's likely to happen again. So, you know, even if the defense has its issues, you know, I'm still looking at a Buffalo's team that, yeah, they do have Steven Montez coming back, but they're going to have to replace Philip Lindsay, who was their number one guy. They're going to have to replace their top three receivers in four of their top five, mm-hmm. including Philip Lindsay. they're also replacing two or three different offensive linemen.
All Pac-12 linemen, Jeremy Irwin.
Yeah, and they're replacing you know, a lot of production in their secondary as well. So I think that if Carter Samuels hits the ground like I think he will, you know, I kind of see this year's matchup as being very similar to how I thought last year's matchup would be, where, you know, maybe it would be a little bit competitive, but I'm still expecting the Rams to walk away with a fairly comfortable win, somewhere between 10 and 14 points.
I won't say comfortable, but I think this is the year the Rams get it done, because that's a lot of talent. Rams already have a game under the belt. I think Colorado got pissed last year that they moved the Oregon State game to week zero last year, and now they get another early game as well, because I'm looking at their dates really quick. I'm on the Buffalo schedule, or the Rams. So they don't play week zero. They play, do they? Where's their schedule here? Did they play prior to that week, or is that their first game versus Colorado State? There it is. Yes, it is. It's their opener, so they're probably not too happy with that also. But I say Rams are going to win, but it's going to be a close one.
All right.
All right, so next time they host Arkansas, which, how did this game happen?
Money.
Who though? Who got the money? Because this is a home game.
For Arkansas probably got money.
You think they paid Arkansas to come to town?
Yeah, probably. I mean, how else would it work?
Was this part of a home-and-home or two-for-one or something?
I have no idea.
So, Arkansas football. I know Jerry Jones played offensive line for them. They used to be in the Southwestern Conference.
Mm-hmm.
They still, for some reason, play Texas A&M in Arlington every year, which is fine. But seriously, this Arkansas team, it's where the projection to win is still a coin flip. Wasn't Arkansas last year they had some huge run the second half? Or was that 2 years ago? When they started off crappy and then somehow turned it on and won like six in a row or something.
I mean, that doesn't seem likely, if only because...
They're not very
good. Well, no, because... And this is something that stands out to me just looking at last year's performance, because I had to brush up on Razorbacks football, you know, Woo Pig Suey and all that.
There you go.
But last year in the SEC, they were dead last in yards per play allowed on defense. And... You know, maybe that was a factor of having a really young defense, but that doesn't exactly inspire a lot of confidence.
No, it shouldn't, especially with this team that's going to run quite well against any team they play for Colorado State, I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then if Obisai Johnson, and by this point, it is week three, and they're 4-8 last year, that's what it was. They started off decent in conference and non-conference play. But yeah. They lost their bowl game as well versus Virginia Tech, which obviously makes them not looking too great, but... They play Eastern Illinois a week before, so it's not like Arkansas is going to figure all this stuff out in week one. This will be the Rams' third game of the year. I just don't trust Arkansas. You know what I mean? It's like looking at who they have coming back. Like, who's their quarterback? Their quarterback situation was terrible last year. They had 18 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. Are they really going to... Oh, no. Austin Allen got drafted somehow? How'd that happen? Jeez, that's terrible. He's in Tampa Bay now.
Yeah, I believe their front runner at quarterback now is Cole Kelly.
Yeah, he'd be a sophomore.
Yeah.
I just remember...
You know, he was okay last year. You know, playing in the SEC, you know, if you just look at his numbers, he's maybe like, you know, Southeastern Colin Hill. Well, and the only reason I say that is because his stat line from his freshman year is remarkably similar to what Hill's was. You know, he completed about 58% of his passes, had a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. And so... You know, maybe there's something there.
Here's the deal. They lose their top quarterback, their top running back. They do get their top receiver back. And so they have some decent receivers coming back. But, like, I just don't – like, maybe to me just thinking Arkansas is terrible because they haven't been very great the past couple of years. Their passing hasn't been all that great. Maybe Kelly will take a step forward when he's the guy, which you would think that would be the case. But losing David Williams to the Broncos isn't that big a deal. He had 8 touchdowns, which is nice, but you have – Deval Wally back there, still 7 touchdowns, nearly 600 yards. They have a couple backups behind him, like Chase Hayden, I think, is still around, I believe, for one more season, freshman from last year. But it's going to be – I think Rams are going to win this one. I just don't think the Arkansas team – defense is not good for Colorado State. We know that for sure. So I'm thinking what the Razorbacks will want to do is maybe run a bit because they have a decent running game. But I think Colorado State's going to get this victory at home and be 3-0.
I mean, I wish I knew more about Arkansas.
I told you, Jerry Jones used to play offensive line there. What else do you need to know?
I mean...
They haven't been good. They're not very good at football. 2016, they go to bowl games, but they're like just above 500 because they'll play teams like UTEP and Toledo in non-conference play. or UT Martin on Halloween. And they'll win 7 or 8 games because they go 3-1 in non-conference play, beat Vanderbilt, maybe beat Texas A&M every now and then, and somehow knock off LSU once in a blue moon.
I mean, I guess I could go with you on this one.
I'm not saying it'll be an easy win, but I just think what Arkansas has done historically the past 5 or 6 years, they've won, like, they top out at 7 or 8 games. They beat really bad teams, knock off an upset here or there. But then, like, here, like, really quick, here's the weird schedule they had in 2014, a random year. They get blown out by Auburn, who was number 6 in the country. Blown out by, they lose Texas A&M, top 10 team. Lose to Alabama, top 10. All one possession games, 1 point to Alabama. They lose to Georgia by 13, top 10 team. Lose to Mississippi State, number 1. Somehow they shut out Ole Miss when they were 5-5, who was number 8 in the country. Then they lose to Missouri next week, who was a top 20 team. So, like, they seem to be competitive, but they can never get things done. And, like, this Rams team is going to be, they're probably contend for the Mountain Division, but Arkansas is just a team where, like, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they were to win 31-10, but more likely it'll be like 24-21 for the Rams, something like that.
Okay, I can buy that.
So what's your prediction? Victory for CSU?
Yeah, I mean, because just looking further into the numbers, I'm also saying that, like, Arkansas was dead last in the SEC in sacks. They were dead last in, like, you know, this, that, and the other. It seems like they were just not very good last year. So, yeah, I mean, I think going on being able to hold serve at home against a team like this is something that, like, the Rams should be able to do.
All right, so if they're 3-0, will they be ranked in the top 25?
Probably not.
You don't think so?
Maybe they'll be in, like, the also receiving votes.
Let me ask an off-the-wall question that'll come back in months once we do our big preview. It's not a spoiler. You already mentioned this before. You think there'll be 3 teams ranked in the preseason in the Mountain West, right?
I think there should be 3 teams for the Mountain.
Will there be?
No, there never is. Never, but there should be.
So what I'm getting at, if the Rams are 3-0 and every other team wins their opening games also, could there be 4 teams ranked in the conference? That's almost 20% of the top 25.
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
So that's a no. I'm going to take that as a no from you, okay?
Yeah.
All right, then they go to Florida. This is part of the, hey, we took your coach, who's not your coach anymore, our coach anymore, but come to town and come to Ben Hill Griffin Stadium with Dane Mullen as new head coach. Is that wrap it up? Is that good?
Are they any better than Arkansas?
Ooh, we should have Brandon hop on for this because he hates Florida and he knows them quite well.
Well, okay, so let me pull this up real quick because I think I may have an answer.
Florida's 32 in S&P projected S&P plus. They're projected to win by 17 points.
So by passing offense, you know, they were dead last in the SEC in quarterback rating last year. And, you know, maybe some of that has to do with youth. I believe they're slated to have a sophomore under center, Felipe Franks, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't think that's the quarterback, but go ahead. I'll look and see.
Okay, I'm just looking at our lads at their depth chart, and that's what it has mentioned. But anyway, didn't they bring in someone?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking up real quick.
Brandon Wimbush or something?
I'll find out.
Either way, I'm not necessarily impressed with their quarterback situation. And I think, you know, too many jokes have been made about their offensive inefficiencies and things like that. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how that trip shakes out, just because it's never easy to go on the road to win, let alone to go on the road to win in SEC country. And, you know, Florida was, you know, on defense, they were okay on a per play basis last year. They were, you know, 73rd, I think, nationally in yards per play allowed. So, I mean, they have some talent there. But, you know, in the same way that, you know, I maybe know Vo'Shawn Joseph and no one else, I'm not sure whether, you know,
here's what they might have.
That talent is going to add up to everything that it probably should.
I went to the soon to be unfortunately deceased sdccountry.com. Cox Media, you're terrible. But they project with the 28th class, it could be their true freshman, Emory Jones. Felipe Franks would be the back. For some reason, I was thinking of Del Rio, but I think he moved on.
Yeah, I think
but the thing is, their passing offense can't be worse than it has been the past couple years. And so, but if it is a true freshman, that's a pretty big deal. I know Dan Mullen because I'm fairly familiar with him because he was the quarterback's coach at University of Utah years and years ago with Alex Smith and Urban Meyer. So I know a little bit what he likes to do. But getting a true freshman ready in a couple weeks, that's tough.
Yeah, so I mean, I think if the offense struggles to find its footing, I don't really see. I don't know. I don't see a lot of
the defense is good
for the Gators. Because I mean, yeah, the defense might be good, but I mean, the offense,
it's just so bad.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a couple of nice running backs in LaMichael Perrine and Malik Davis. You know, Davis, for instance, averaged almost 7 yards carry last year. But, you know, if they don't get the situation under center resolved, that's probably not going to matter all that much. It seems like an offense that's likely to go through growing pains more than anything.
Like, their offense, defense, who I thought it was really good, it was still top 30 in the country, still pretty good. But, like, Michigan was whatever. They gave up 33 points in last year. They give up 20-plus points to Tennessee, Kentucky, Vanderbilt. Then they play the tougher SEC schedule where they don't give up too many points. But, like, South Carolina is nothing special, and they gave up 28 points.
Mm-hmm.
Florida State, which I know that's a different game. I think Jimbo has gone at that point. Give up 35. So maybe we're giving too much credit for this defense.
Possibly. Conversely, I think you can give them credit because they were pretty tough against the pass last year. Like, even though they gave up... Yeah, even though they gave up 8 yards per attempt last year, which is next to last in the SEC. Ironically, Arkansas was dead last in that.
There you go.
But they only gave up a 54% completion rate, which was, you know, well above average in the SEC. And they also picked off 14 passes. So if there's a challenge, it might be in, you know, the fact that their secondary, in looking at the numbers, has a few pretty good playmakers. Like Chauncey Gardner was credited with 6 tackles for loss and 7 pass breakups last year. He's a junior. You know, Duke Dawson had 4 interceptions and 9 pass breakups. Marco Wilson, as a freshman, had 10 pass breakups. So, you know, maybe this is kind of a defensive slugfest more than people might expect it would be.
I would too. The area where they have the best chance to do something is running the ball, because as the worst part of the defense, they're 51st nationally. They had some good games. Like, UAB had like 18 or 3 rushing yards. Florida State had 88, but like they like gave up over 200 to LSU, who runs the ball well. Georgia, really good. Missouri and South Carolina had over 200 yards. So that's the area where if they're going to have success, that's where it needs to be done. Give up just over 4 yards per carry. So they have the depth to do it, but I can't predict a victory for Colorado State at Florida to do that. Because again, Bobo struggles against good teams or rivals. You know what I mean? Big time games. He's not very good.
Yeah, I think I'm with you.
All right. Illinois State victory. Move on. San Jose State auto victory, you think?
Pretty close, yeah.
I do want to see a Montel Aaron. I'm higher than most people. I think a full year he could do something decent, but it's going to be a victory. We already said New Mexico in our prior show. Anything in New Mexico you want to add in this for the Rams fan tuning in about what the Lobos to expect from their challenge?
I mean, if you look at last year's matchup, you know, it was maybe a little bit closer than it should have been because, you know, both the offense and the defense were a little bit lackluster for Colorado State. I'm really not expecting that to be the case this time around because, you know, if you didn't listen to our New Mexico podcast, either
go
you should.
First of all. Go do that, please.
Or, you know, just keep in mind that, you know, they're replacing a lot of production on the ground. And, you know, even though they have a new offensive coordinator who might be doing a few different things, I'm not necessarily sold that they have a legitimate answer at quarterback in 2018. And I think that's ultimately what's going to hold that team back in, you know, what I think will be a Colorado State win.
Okay. So we'll move on to that. So at this point, let me just go back to the ranking. They'd be sitting at 3, 4, 5, 6, and 1 heading to the Boise State game. So there'll be a lot of hype. Probably not ranked, maybe getting votes depending on how close the Florida game is.
Mm-hmm.
I have to ask the question, but is this year they beat Boise State?
No.
How can they beat Boise State, you think?
Don't give up a 25 point lead.
Oh, burn. That's
it's a burn, but
what's
you
right?
know, they had Boise dead to rights. Like, let's not beat around the bush. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the offense did just about everything right. Like, how often do you score 52 points and lose? Like, they're
at least once.
you know, we talked about the Rocky Mountain Showdown earlier as having been their worst offensive performance. Mm-hmm. Their performance on offense against Boise was their best performance of the year. It was 97%. But you know what their defensive percent was?
1, 2, 4. 4, that's close.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they had maybe a couple fewer drives, but they ran way more plays than Boise did. They you know, averaged more plays per possession. They were running the same amount of lengthy drives. It's just, you know, you can't have a defensive performance like that again. But I think, you know, what's going to make it tough is, you know, Boise's defense is still going to be as tough as ever, and they're going to be tough to throw the ball against. And that wasn't really something that Nick Stevens had a lot of success doing last year. I think he was right around 2/3, but he had an interception. And, you know, was maybe if he was a little bit better on those passing downs, that might have made the difference. Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking with Carter Samuels under center, it'll be competitive. I'm fully expecting it to be a back and forth game. But, I mean, just long story short, Boise State, looking at the conference right now, is the best team in the Mountain West. And I think for as good a battle as the Rams can bring, that I think they're going to come up short in that matchup.
Yeah, S&P Plus has 14% chance for Colorado State, 18.5. This is the least likely game. They're more likely to beat Florida than Boise State.
And I think maybe it's underestimating CSU a little bit.
But it's their defense,
but the defense is going to have to not give up 59 points again,
or give up 49. You know what I mean? After the first half, whatever. So that's the thing. Like that, if that, not that Florida is anything special this year, but their hardest game is Boise State. Yeah. I think offensively they could score points even for how good the Boise State defense is, even losing like Leighton Vander Esch and others on the Moa and other players out there. I think the Rams' offense will still be fine. Put up points, run the ball quite well. It's just that what stops can the defense make? And unless they get like a turnover, like not to break it down right now, but ways to overcome that, special teams on kicking the ball to field position and maybe getting a short field on off a turnover or some defensive play, or holding the ball and running it forever so Boise's offense can't score while you have the, you know what I mean, like keep their offense off the field.
Yeah.
But that's how the Rams have to do it, because I don't see their defense being like, they might be, like we mentioned in the prior show, Boise's defense really good. Fresno, San Diego State, there's a lot of good defenses out there. Wyoming. This defense is, like, after those four, it's pretty much a crapshoot. Maybe UNLV okay, finally gets a little bit better. San Jose State's not great in defense. The Lobos, we see what they have. So the Rams might be fifth in the conference, but it's a distance fifth compared to fourth.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's asking a lot for the Rams' offense to be, like, as killer as they were in this game last year. And to say the defense should take a step forward. Like, I think even if the defense takes a step forward, if the offense loses, you know, just a little bit from their performance last year, that's all the difference that a team like Boise is going to need.
All right, so that's a loss for me. So if we sit at, we're sitting at one, I mean, this is one of the most probably intriguing games of the year, not because it's a rival game, but Wyoming defense, they might be best in the conference, like one or two, like you said. So Logan Wilson, Andrew Wingard getting some All-American love this year. They have a lot of other guys. This game's kind of the opposite Boise game, where it'll come down to who's going to move the ball in offense for Wyoming, which we have no clue who will be. And that'll help out this Rams defense, which, like, we've ad nauseum saying, hey, it's not very good, but maybe they'll be better. And this could be like last year's game was 13-10. It could be something very low scoring because Rams offense can't move the ball. Wyoming's offense sort of can move the ball because of how bad the Rams defense is.
CSU should have won this game last year.
Yeah, they should have. Shouldn't have let Josh Allen run that touchdown in.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, I like Wyoming's defense. I think we're both in agreement about that. But I think that, you know, even missing the key pieces from last year's offense, the Rams should be able to move the ball better than they were able to last year. And, you know, I don't think it's the kind of thing where you can blame it all on the elements. I think they just underperformed last year. And I really don't see that happening again, even as good as the Wyoming defense is. So while I'm definitely expecting another hotly contested bronze boot contest, I do think the Rams should win this game, finally.
Yeah, Wyoming's a road favorite at this point.
Yeah.
I'm going to loss that game. I'm going to say another loss. It's close for me to pick on that one, but I think it's just a defense. Like I mentioned, what did I say, 2-0 game or something?
Mm-hmm.
That could happen earlier on. But I seriously think that, yeah, I think the Rams will move the ball, but it'll just be like a low-scoring game. Wyoming will need like a field goal kick or two, maybe get one touchdown, but I think Wyoming's going to get it done again because their defense is that superior.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then they have off week. Then they go to Nevada. Nevada's the most wild, like you already mentioned, the dark horse won the conference. Last year's game was amazing. Was it 45-42? Rams snuck out a victory. It's at Mackey Stadium. I think the Wolfpack's offense could be even better because Ty Gangi is finally, there's no sharing time a little bit, which he did the first couple games. But the second half of last year, like there's a reason I put Ty Gangi number two in my quarterback rankings for the season to come in, even though some disagree, even you. But he's still top three. Like he's right there with Ripon, McMarion, and then Gangi. Those three guys are the clear top of the class, I think. And I don't know how the Rams defense can stop this, because if it's anything like last year, it'll just be 100 points each.
Yeah, I mean, in the same way that I really felt like Colorado State should not have lost, or should not have lost the Wyoming game, they really shouldn't have won the Nevada game last year. And I mean, some of it comes down to a lack of efficiency, because, you know, one of the big things from last year was, you know, Ty Gangi was under 50% on passing downs, which ended up making a huge difference. And he got almost no help from the running game. I think they only had like 50 yards rushing or something like that. And, you know, even though they're definitely going to be a pass first offense like they were last year, you know, with the questions that we just talked about in the Rams secondary, I don't know if they're going to be able to slow them down as much as they did last year. I'm expecting it to be another high scoring game, but I do think that the Wolfpack can win this one at home.
We're on the same page. I'm going Wolfpack victory.
All right.
That's three losses in a row. And Bobo doesn't beat Wyoming or Boise or... I got the Colorado.
Well, I have them beating Wyoming, but you don't.
I know. I have the Colorado victory, so there's one out of... It's number two out of however many rival bowl games you get to. Utah State will be interesting. That's next up. Real quick, that's back at home, not your Credit Union Stadium in Fort Collins. And... I you are more solid ground on the Aggies than me. I'm still no clue what they're going to do. I know I'll probably repeat this a million times, but it's a good stat. They're 1-12 in one possession games the past 2 years, or one score games. That means eight or less. So that's an issue. They do get Jordan Love back, which I mentioned in the Lobos podcast. He's not back, but the guy. Offense should be going pretty good. Rontavian Corver passing the ball. They have no running attack, which is an issue. So this will be a game where. Because the projections right now have Utah State being a favorite. Why does S&P Plus hate the Rams, Matt? That seems interesting that they're not the favorite versus the Aggies.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Should we get Bill Sand on the line? Should I text him real quick? I think he's on vacation in some mystery spot, so I won't get a hold of him at the moment. But it is odd because they're at home, which is a big deal. Utah State wasn't all that great last year, and their expectation this year is slightly... average at 77. I don't know what are they banking on, that the Jordan Love led offense will be that much better, to why they should be the favorite over the Rams.
I mean, I almost wonder whether it comes down to the defenses, because I think Utah State could be a little bit better on defense, even despite losing a couple of really prominent pieces like Jalen Davis and Dallin Levitt. You know, we talk about how our views of the offense in Logan are, you know, divisive.
Different.
Like I feel, yeah, they're different. I mean, I don't know. I think that these two teams could end up being more evenly matched by the time this matchup comes around than it looks like right now.
That's what I'm thinking
too. I think right now Utah State might have the slight edge on defense, and I think that the Rams have the slight edge on offense. And I think it's the latter that's ultimately going to tilt the outcome in the Rams' favor. So I have this one down as a CSU win.
I did too. I just don't see how Utah... this may sound disrespectful, but I don't see Utah State winning this game, especially on the road for them.
All right.
So I go for an Aggies victory. Final game of the year. Is this considered a rival game? Is there a trophy for CSU Air Force?
Yeah, it's the Ram Falcon trophy.
Oh, how can I forget that? I retire. I see you later. I'm done. This one again. It baffles me. They're a slight road favorite. You would think they would be, and they're a slight favorite here with S&P Plus. Air Force is 112. Colorado State's like what, 45th? Yeah, 45th. Oh, that's last year. Sorry. No,
they're 95th.
Sorry, not my point goes out the window. But for some reason, they had 6-6 record. Their projection. I don't know what to make of the Air Force at this point, and especially Thanksgiving weekend, we'll never know at this point because it's stupid to project that far ahead. We just know the basics of what the offense will be for the Falcons and their defense. Offense should be good. Defense, hit or miss.
Yeah, I mean, I think you might have said the same thing last year that you could say about this. I mean, you would think the Rams would be able to take care of business in this matchup.
Yeah.
Which I'm pretty sure I said last year, probably. And that's just not what happened.
They should be able to pass against this team. That's the thing. They have the passing players. You know what I mean? The offensive passing game to beat most teams on the conference. And the conference, it comes down to, we'll say it over and over, defense will be better. And how quickly does Curtis Samuels assimilate with the offense? Those are like the only real big questions. Running game's fine. Offensive line should be okay. Those couple guys, that's, I guess, another concern. But it's basically what we want to know. Will the defense be better? And will they have a passing game with new quarterback and Michael Gallup gone?
Yeah, and I mean, I think some of it last year had to do with the fact that the Rams lost the turnover battle pretty handily. Like, Nick Stevens ended up throwing 3 interceptions in that game. So, you know, I really don't see that happening again. You know, we'll talk more about the Falcons later. But, you know, they definitely have a lot of questions all around their defense, which I think makes this a prime opportunity for Colorado City to really put up some points. So while I'm expecting both teams to probably get to 30 points, I do think that the Rams can finish off their season with a pretty comfortable win.
I'm projecting a victory as well, which puts me at 5, 6, 7, 8, and 5.
8 and 5?
Wait.
I think it's 8 and 4.
Oh, sorry. I'm shortchanging your loss. 8 and 4, which is better than last year and slightly better than most prognosticators to date so far, and well above the 5.5 line that's put on this team win total. So, again, easy money if you can gamble legally.
And I have them at 9 and 3, as well as 6 and 2 in conference.
So you had them beating the Wyoming games where we differ, right?
Yes.
What do you think their best case scenario could be?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Because I'm tempted to say conference championship.
Are you tempted to say 12-0?
Well, let's put it this way. There's a non-zero chance to go. But I will say this with every team. Because I think there's, what, four or five teams in this conference that could potentially go 12-0 this year. But going undefeated is really hard. But at the same time, like, if you tell me that, like, you know, they take advantage of a listless Florida offense and they catch Boise on an off week and they manage to kind of outgun Nevada and things like that, you know, even if it's a 1 or 2% chance, I do think that it's there. Like, that's like if everything goes right, like Curtis Samuels is a first team quarterback and the defense makes the jump to, like, the top 3 and things like that. I have a very hard time thinking that's going to happen. But I can't say that it's an impossibility. I do think that possibility is there.
Well, outside of it have to be in there, just because it has to be until you lose.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at it, because, like you said, it's very difficult to go undefeated if it was more teams to do it. But if you look at each individual game, I could give a reason, a legitimate reason where they could win. Like, one more thing for Boise State. They play Nevada Friday night prior, 6 days in between games, and a rival the week before at Nevada.
Yeah.
And that could be a challenging game for Boise State. When you go game by game, there are a lot of toss-ups, but I could say, like, that's the thing. When you say, oh, they can win this game, they can win this game, but you don't realize tonight's week 8, well, player X is injured. This other team had some guy who outperformed, or things changed. But when you look game by game, I'm not going to say it's not possible. It's very difficult, unlikely. But like you said, Florida, the offense is terrible. What if their true freshman is not very good, or they have to stay with them, or there's injuries? Not injuries, but just production on the field, not great. Boise State, he said, travel. They CSU overachieves, but they have the talent out there to probably win all these games. Will they? I'm not going to say no, but if I'm going to say a realistic expectation, not looking at, like, each game in a vacuum, I probably could say 10-2 is probably the best I'd see them doing.
I mean, I think that makes sense. I mean, if you look back at the win probabilities, there are 5 games where the Rams' win probability is between 44% and 54%.
Yeah.
And so that comes with, like, a wide spectrum of possibilities, because, you know, they could run the table in Mountain West play, but, you know, if they have an off week, they could lose to Arkansas. They could lose to Colorado. They could lose to Wyoming. They could lose to Air Force. They could lose to Utah State,
mm-hmm.
because they've done all of those things before.
Also, the go by the percentage again, they're only favored in, what, four games?
Mm-hmm.
So, or no, the Hawaii, Illinois State, San Jose State. Yeah, no, five games. They could be 5-7 based off just the favorites right here. But then again, how many? Half of those are, like you said, in the coin flip scenario. So, I say 10 is the high ceiling. I'm going to go 8-4. But then again, I could honestly see them going like 4-8. Like he just ran through all those scenarios.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just as unlikely as them going 12-0. But I mean, if things fall apart, you know, that's, I think, as deep as this team can go. Yeah.
I think bowl games is a baseline, minimum. Like it has been in the past 3 years.
Definitely.
I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, even though maybe they missed their best chance at a conference title, you know, in kind of looking at what they have coming back, it's kind of the same question as last year. Can the defense take a step forward? Because if they can, you know, they can break that 7-5 cycle and really have themselves a potentially special season.
Yeah, and then also, like, not to go too far, but 2019, if Colin Hill's fully healthy, the running back game, Kinzie Bodie, I mean, all these, their 2019 could be set up for a bigger year. But 2018 will be, I think, record-wise, slightly better than last year, but I don't think the team is as good as last year based off just talent of who they have. So I'm still going with 8-4. You were at 8-4, were you 9-3? Because of
why? I was at 9-3.
9-3. So anything else we need to add for the Rams here?
I think we're pretty much all set.
You're welcome for another 75-minute podcast. Again, check us out, MWR.com. Go to our Facebook page, leave some comments. If you do subscribe to our Patreon, you can actually leave comments there because you can't on our website, and you get all these podcasts. Like, if you really wanted to, today is, say, May 26th, man. I'll give the date out. Is that today's date?
It is the 27th.
If you wanted to and you heard this, you could actually hear this on May 27th. Just saying. But any podcast we do will be up immediately possible. You can comment, all that fun stuff. Go to our Twitter page, MWCWire, where Matt handles polls and other fun stuff better than me sometimes on Twitter, which is great. You mentioned basketball content, so I guess we should hype hoops, right? Just because Eli does a great job and so do others.
Absolutely.
And we'll be back, I'll say next time, because regular schedule, once a week. Again, if you're a Patreon, who knows, every other day, possibly for maybe not podcast, but more frequently than the other ones, just because how we're doing it in the off season. But one last thing, go to Blog Talk Radio, go to iTunes, go to Stitcher. Matt, have you reviewed our podcast? Sorry to pretend.
I'm pretty sure I have.
Okay, good answer. I don't know if I have. I do actually, I think I have. So give us a review. Go to iTunes, give us a review. Help us out. That'll allow more people to hear our show. And if you are a CSU fan, share it on your 24/7 page, scout page. And say, hey, I think these guys know what they're talking about. If not, they're mildly entertaining, at least to pass an hour in the summer to talk college football. So, and Colorado State football at that. So that's it for today. We'll be back next time. Probably San Diego State, but unless there's a massive voting surge between now and like, well, nobody's going to hear this until then. So I'll just say it. San Diego State is next, folks. And see you next time.